Welcome to the Manifesting Clarity Podcast, the show that empowers you to unlock your full potential and create the life you've always dreamed of. I'm your host, Jen Roth, and I am beyond grateful to be here with you today. Welcome and welcome back, everyone. So excited to be here with you today. I am getting to have a conversation with Christine, and this is a topic I was driving this morning, curious about intros for the podcast and how excited and how much life I feel like gets infused into me when I get to do these podcasts and meet everyone and share. And I'm going to say how God, the universe, all the angels are working in our favor to lead us to right where we're supposed to be in the most divine timing. The reason I share a little bit about that is the topics that we're going to talk about today are super near and dear to my heart. And I'm really curious about my future and how my actions and what events will lead to different places in my life. Some of you, if you've been listening since the beginning, know that I started the podcast the week that I was back in Michigan with a super dear cousin helping him pass. And due to miraculous teams, due to time in the field and where I was in my business and my career, I was able to launch the podcast thanks to my team and be with my family doing something that lights my heart on fire. And then the curiosities of death and passing and spirit and, oh my heck, it gets my heart and my soul and my everything just like going on every level. I've had the gift of being able to be with a good handful of people who are passing and or in their time of transition at the end of life. And I became a doula in my journey so far, helping babies to be born into this world. And if there is something you haven't experienced yet, I would highly recommend going and seeing if you could be a part of a birth or a labor and seeing and experiencing, I'm going to call it birth into the afterlife of really the transformation of this full life. I don't even know. There aren't words to describe what it is that my heart is feeling at this moment in time and that we get to have this conversation, because Christine has focused in this area for her work. So Christine, I'm going to stop talking, hand it over to you and have you introduce yourself. Who are you? What are you up to in the world? And oh my goodness, I'm so excited about this conversation.
Well, I want to get into it with you as well, because you just said so many beautiful things that we could unpack. But my name is Christine Davies, and I am a hospital chaplain and spiritual director. And I journey with people who are suffering, oftentimes going through grief and loss. And as you said, many times in the hospital, people and families who are gathered when the patients are at end of life. And I help people to get in touch with their spirituality, whatever that may happen to be, and to build resilience. And I also educate others about how to be a better support when your friend and family is navigating through a crisis.
Oh, I love this so much. Client slash dear friend is going through a challenging time in her life, I would say. And at one point it may have been a crisis or felt more like a crisis. And now it's a long-term how to handle a situation that's continuing to occur every day. And then the conversations that she's having with others when she chooses to share that part of what's going on in her life. So the language that you're using around this is just so incredibly powerful. And I feel like so many of us, until we're in these situations, have no idea what to say, what to do, how to act. So thank you for the work that you're doing to support people in figuring that out for them, because everybody's going to do it in their own way too, right? To some extent, but that's huge. And figuring out and getting in touch with our spirituality, I think that's a big unknown for so many people. And creating a safe place for people to process that and explore that is so important.
Yeah, we don't have avenues for a lot of this in our life, in our society. We tend to live in a world that tries to focus on the positive, and we don't always know what to do when people are in pain. We also live in a world where people are in denial about death, and they try to avoid it and not talk about it. And so really trying to normalize grief and loss, I think, is part of my mission. And then also explain to people the differences between spirituality and religion, and how they can access one or both of those things to really deepen their own sense of meaning in the world.
So walk us back. I'm so curious. How did you choose this? What were some key pieces of your life that were clues for you to move into this direction?
Yes. So it's not hospital chaplaincy is not a common job, I will say. And I'll first maybe define it for your listeners that have never heard of this before. And sometimes patients I'm interacting with have never heard of what this is. But essentially, I am an extra layer of emotional and spiritual support for patients, their families, and staff who are all in the hospital and helping them to deal with whatever it is that they might be going through. A lot of what I'm doing is around end of life, but there may be other issues that come up while someone is hospitalized. And so really caring for individuals in wherever they are. I grew up going to a local Presbyterian church with my family, and I'm now a Presbyterian minister, much to the bewilderment of my family. I really took to it. My sisters, you know, I don't think they've been to church, you know, since my ordination, probably. But I was a precocious kid, really enjoyed Sunday school and choir and all of that. And from a young age, was convinced of God's presence in the world and in my life. And I really thought that God wanted me to help people. And my interpretation of how I was going to do that was by being a physician. Now, my mother was a nurse, so I think she may have kind of pointed me in that direction, but I would, you know, be sitting on the floor reading the Merck Medical Dictionary for fun and playing with her stethoscope. And I became an emergency medical technician and started working in ambulances. And I would often I'm not a good driver, so I would find myself in the back of the ambulance with the patient while my partner would be driving, and wound up really loving being in the space with them where they were just in pain and I was there with them. There was minimal, you know, things that I could do in terms of wound repair and giving them oxygen and, you know, ensuring that safe transport. But really what I was drawn to was, you know, holding their hands while they were asking, like, why is this happening to me? Providing some of that comfort. And that's actually much of what I do now. And then I became a patient and was in and out of hospitals. And saw a lot of doctors and a lot of specialists and grew a little dismayed by the bedside manner of some of the individuals I was working with, and eventually got a diagnosis of generalized epilepsy, which I'm fortunate is under control now. But around that time, I grew really frustrated with medicine, and it was around that time that the church I had been attending had just gotten a new associate pastor who took me out to dinner and just talked to me about what it was like to go through all of this and the impact that it was having on my own sense of spirituality. And it was through that I realized, oh, that's spiritual caregiving, right? And that's what I want to do. And there's so many ways to heal people. And so I went to seminary, changed my major, and when I was in seminary, I wasn't quite sure, you know, where I was going to land. I did several church internships, but that was not for me. I did not want to be up there preaching every week. I really liked being with people of all faith traditions or no faith tradition. And the hospital allowed for me to do that. I had a side venture as a cognitive behavioral therapist because I also went to social school. And that gave me a lot of tools for my work now, but I missed about their spirituality and how they're making meaning in the world and how they were coping from that perspective. And so that's what led me to a an internship as well as a residency. And so to be a hospital chaplain, some people think you just call up the hospital and ask to go pray with patients. I get those calls sometimes from well-meaning individuals. I say, no, this is a profession. So someone needs a master's degree, usually 3 years master's, either Master of Divinity or a similar degree. They need ordination or endorsement by a faith-specific group, as well as 1,600 hours of postgraduate training. And so now part of my job is I run those postgraduate training programs as well. So it is intense. And while I'm grounded in my own faith tradition, we are really taught to be present with people of all faith traditions and anticipate what needs might come up for them. And also to be with people who have no faith tradition. Sometimes I will walk in the room and they'll say, "Oh, chaplain, I'm not really religious." I said, "That's okay. Tell me what's on your heart today. You know, what is giving you meaning right now?" And I have to reassure them, I'm not the church police. I don't care, you know, when they've last been to worship or what their, you know, what their status is in terms of affiliation. But I'm there to be with them and treat them as a whole person.
Imagine if we were all able to be treated as a whole person. I met a person this morning who I am like just craving to figure out, find, like, hear so much more of the story. And I look forward to sharing the story with everyone at some point. He had a double lung transplant and heart transplant all at the same time. Oh my heck. Talk about like your life being rerouted and giving everything just over to trust and faith and surrender, like, whoa. And then the rebuilding of all of that. I'm so curious if he had a hospital chaplain come in and chat with him. It's going to be really fun to hear and see that part of the story.
Yeah, I hope so. Because especially, you know, so there's different elements of spiritual distress or things that may come up with people, sometimes depending on their hospitalization or depending on what else is going on in their lives. And so for a lot of the transplant patients that I have worked with, they feel really conflicted a lot of the time, because on the one hand, they need this organ, or in your case, you know, this individual needed multiple organs and in order to sustain their life. And so that is imperative. And they're hoping and waiting and praying sometimes for all of those things to line up and to be a match. And, you know, waiting with vigilance for that phone call. And there's a lot of starts and stops and ups and downs to that. But on the other hand, they talk with me about, they know that in order for them to get the organs that they need, that means someone has died, and the complexity that that brings with that. And so in a way, a lot of the patients that I work with are grieving someone that they don't know while also celebrating the fact that they are able to be a recipient. And so too, I've worked on the other side with family members who are choosing to make that, you know, amazing gift of helping their family member to give the gift of life to other people through their death. And they have found it so meaningful to be able to do that. And I think in a lot of ways has really helped them to cope with their own grief over the loss of their loved one.
So many questions, so many different directions. So grief is definitely one of the pieces that has come up multiple times. And I do believe that this is something that probably a lot of people could use support in. I feel like our culture, at least here in the States for sure, is so fast paced. Go, 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 go. And when grief sets in, it's not always maybe acknowledged, or maybe we feel the need to push it aside or move through it more quickly and not understand the waves that come through of emotions that are totally unplanned. Having a conversation with a girlfriend just last week who lost her uncle, and he just passed away yesterday, and I've been holding space for everyone else. I'd love to talk about holding space. I think that that's amazing and so key in your specific journey, as well as following clues around that, and then how you can create something even though you're really not sure of what the path is, but how you can keep following those clues for yourself of what feels right and aligned and those callings or taps on the shoulder. Oh my gosh, so many different questions. The grief in clarity work that we do, one of the things is called a daily check-in. We ask questions: what's different, what worked, what didn't work in my performance last 24 hours. It's the state of my mind, body, and spirit. And I love talking about spirit with everyone. Some people it lands for and it resonates with, and other people not at all. And my belief is that spirit is that essence that we have when we come in as an infant, and it's pure and perfect and whole and complete. I think you used something like the whole, treating the whole person, right? Being able to support the whole person. And when spirit isn't potentially positive and or in an more expansive state, I sort of see that as grief, right? Like the dampening of our spirit, the grieving that we feel through spirit that a lot of people maybe don't really have a word for or an understanding for, because maybe they're not tracking with or as aligned with their spirit as, or aware of their spirit as they could be. I'm not sure if any of that resonates with you or how you guide people through that, but I'd love to hear your experiences and perspective.
Two kind of different thoughts come up. So the way that I tend to define spirituality my very quick definition is how we're connecting with ourselves, how we're connecting with others around us, maybe our friends, our family, our community, and then how we're connecting with that which is divine or transcendent. For some people, that's God. For some people, that's the universe or nature. And spirituality is a balance of all of those three realms. And what I'm looking for as a hospital chaplain, as well as a spiritual director, is what happens when there's a break in any one of those realms, right? So for a patient who, you know, is having organ failure and their body is failing them, they may feel like they can't trust their body to do what it is that we, the rest of us, take for granted, right? And so that's going to potentially cause a break there. Or for community and others, you know, even someone that's in the hospital for a routine reason. I was with someone the other day who was just being observed overnight, but he told me, I've never spent the night away from my wife of 50 years. And so even though it was a temporary break, there was a break in, you know, the his supportive relationships, which can cause, you know, isolation. And then it's also what is going on with one's relationship with the divine. And if someone is going through a major diagnosis or a loss or some sort of trauma, they may have all sorts of thoughts and feelings about that directed at God, at the universe, whomever. And what we try to do is allow for those things to be vocalized, because to me, that's the important part. And I think sometimes that can derive from how they have internalized a belief in their life that maybe someone said to them, or maybe they grew up hearing. So for instance, I have a lot of patients who may say to me, I know that God never gives you more than you can handle, but this is too much. And so that is an example of someone's internalized belief system. Really, when rubber hits the road, that's not what they actually believe. And it sends them into the spiritual distress, which can cause alienation or anger toward God. And so really working through that, you know, what do you believe about the divine in your life? You know, what are the traits or the characteristics of this God or this divine being? Is God one that wants people to suffer? And really, that's going to be different for everyone to make meaning of how they believe that. And sometimes we have to parse out what they were told, which may no longer fit the faith of one's childhood. And they reexamine it and say, okay, no, this doesn't serve me. Or there's all sorts of religious trauma, as you can imagine, that's going to play into that, and really trying to get to the core of what is helping that person, what is going to be a useful coping as they are trying to move through either a diagnosis or, like you said, a grief.
For those who may have experienced, who may be mad at God and or experienced religious trauma, what would you recommend for them to do? Who would you recommend for them? Like what steps, if they're hearing this, if it's piquing a curiosity?
Yeah. So I want them to know that they are not alone. unfortunately, this is really normal. Religion is problematic for all sorts of reasons. As a clergy person, I have no issue admitting that. There can be toxicity. There can be abuse. I have heard so many stories about what it does to people and that religious trauma. So first, I want you to know that you're not alone, and to acknowledge it and the pain that that has caused you. And then you have the right to process through that however you would like. For some people, they say, nope, not for me. I'm not returning to religion at all. And I'm completely shutting the door to that. And others may still want to have pieces from that. I was talking to someone the other day who said, I really miss going to church at Christmas and hearing the hymns, right? But I don't really want to go to church. And so how do I do it? Ways in which you can honor parts of the practices or the rituals or the beliefs that are still helpful for you. And then, not taking on what is harmful. There are, people that you can reach out to help you through this. So part of my work as a spiritual director, I have a private practice where I see individuals who are looking to really either deepen their faith or their understanding of spirit, as you would say, or to disentangle some of their previous beliefs, or the beliefs, it's usually of their, families of origin, or, how they grew up and the ways in which they want to engage in that, but don't know how and don't know how to start. And we will sometimes go through different practices that they may try, as well as trying to see which of the realms they might need support in, right? Is it that connection with self, connection with others, connection with the divine? Usually when people are seeing me, it's more about the connection with the divine, but we can also look through those other realms also.
Beautiful that there's sort of three buckets right off of the bat that people can take a look at, right? To ask themselves that question and start to ponder that and have some curiosity around that first. And possibly it's all three. You never really know. Mm-hmm. So we'll make sure that all of Christine's websites and links and how you can get in touch with her are in the show notes. And then I'll have you share that at the end too. For me in my life of like, there's the deepest inner knowing of trust that I feel like I can't question when there's something here at work. Right. And I believe truly that it's all the same, that it's some energy force that I personally can't name or use different names for. And then my mind gets like so thrown. So maybe we can have a continued conversation if there's others that are curious about this, of when the planet was formed, how it got here, what's going on. So we live in Colorado. You are on the East Coast. I say we, I live in Colorado. Jacqueline lives in the middle of the country in Arkansas, and you're on the East Coast. And Jacqueline and I were driving. She was just out here recently, and we were driving through an area called Red Rocks. And her mind and how it works and the analyzing and information that she's seeking is always, it's so intriguing for me. And the rocks coming out of the earth, right, in a certain way, and she's curious how old they are. And I had absolutely no idea. I've driven in that park, I can't tell you how many times, and I've never questioned, like, no clue. And she, I would say, has more of a strength right now in desire to go to church, whereas I personally have, I'm so excited about this conversation, some work to do on my connection with self, connection with others, and connection with the divine, in detangling stories and beliefs and patterns and stuff that definitely is not mine. So in all of that, I said to her, because I felt like it was a safe place, like, what's your take on all of this, and how and where in the heck does the Bible come into all of this? Because I don't, it doesn't compute in my brain. I also have not studied it, and I've not chosen to pause to take the time to put all of the pieces together, but we were having this conversation, and she said, there's one thing that my dad said to me, and maybe we can insert this in a edited version, which is basically, when people are in need and or in crisis, there's not a person on the planet that isn't praying to some form or something outside of themselves, asking for or pleading for help. And I'm curious if that resonates for you or not, but that was a really interesting comment that she made that I absolutely loved. And I feel like that is that inner trust or inner knowing in me that at the core, I don't question, but then my mind or subconscious or who knows, problem solving attempts tries to go somewhere else to potentially probably solve or fix a belief that isn't aligned or didn't work at some point in life, or that wasn't aligned, because we're all human, right? And we all have shadow patterns. We all have fallen from grace, if you want to say, however you'd like to describe and explain all of that. And then there's this, I believe, like huge piece of us that is spirit and that is divine and that is source and light. And the more I tap into that, the less I question all of the rest. Like, it's not mine to figure out, which actually leads me to something else, which you said earlier, is that God doesn't need another angel. So I am so curious about that comment as well. I'm going to let you take it from here and you can go sure. Whichever direction and we can schedule like five more of these.
But, I'm happy to come back. Yeah, there's a lot to unpack and to untangle, as it were. Yeah. So one of the things that I like to teach about is not to use religious platitudes when trying to comfort other people. So I'm writing an article right now called God Doesn't Need Another Angel. We need to stop saying these things. So in that bucket, I would put sayings like everything happens for a reason, let go and let God, they're in a better place, or God doesn't close a door without opening a window. Things that are really a type of, you've heard of toxic positivity, and these are type of spiritual toxic positivity statements. And many of them are not scriptural in nature, but they are these ways of only focusing on the positive that really get a person's experience that is going through a crisis. And I've said these things in the past without realizing the harm that they can do. So it took, you know, my going to seminary, my doing all this work in hospitals to understand our words can wound. So when you say something like that, it's coming from a good place, right? We're wanting to cheer the other person up. It's hard to be with people when they are suffering. You know, we have an inclination to help, but it tells them that they are not allowed to have any sort of negative emotions about it. It also can internalize something for them. If you take this, you know, one thing of, you know, God wanted another angel. Well, if I'm told that and I've just lost my child, I'm going to think that God is evil and sadistic. I'm not going to want to believe in that God. And that's where that anger is going to come from, with good reason. Or another phrase that I hear a lot is, oh, if you just have enough faith, right? And if I have a loved one that dies and I'm told I didn't pray hard enough, which I've sat with people who've been told this, and they say, you know, I can't believe that I wouldn't have enough faith. And then they think that something might be wrong with them. So either way, the outcome is not good. So I really try to stress to people, instead of throwing out one of these kind of trite phrases, they're the empty, what they can do instead is show up and shut up. That is the best advice I could give to you, because it's really about your presence being enough. And nothing that you are going to say, especially when you're with someone who is grieving the death of a loved one, nothing you're going to say is going to make it better, but there's plenty that you can say that's going to make it worse. And so even saying something like, I don't know what to say right now, or I'm here with you, those are much better. Or even defending against, you know, the other religious platitudes that might come their way, and saying, you know, there's a great card by Emily McDowell that says, let me be the first to punch whoever tells you that everything happens for a reason. But really trying to be with the person where they are at, asking them, how are they actually feeling, right? And don't let them say fine, because we know that fine is not a feeling, but being there in the space for their anger, for their fear, for their sadness. And we mentioned it a little while ago too, about grief, right? And how our society is not really good at handling anything that has to do with death and pain and loss. And there's several myths around grief. And one of those is that we get over it And we don't get over it. It changes us. And I like to say that we don't move on from grief. We move with it. So we are going to be different as a result of the grief. There are days where it's going to feel less acute than other days, but it is always with us. And people who are not actively grieving sometimes feel afraid that they're going to cause someone pain by naming the grief that they just had. But that's not true. If you talk to anyone going through something, they usually say, no, I would welcome the opportunity to talk about this, especially if they are grieving the death of someone. You know, I'd welcome the opportunity, you know, to talk about, as you're talking, my uncle that just died, and to tell you about him. Because we often change the subject, we don't know what to say, and so we don't say anything. And that's also a danger, right? To just fall away and pretend that that thing never happened.
That's an interesting technique. So to welcome for them to share more and or explain maybe, or share what they're going through, share what their memories are of that person or something for, I almost think like what's coming to mind as a redirect, and not really, it's more of like a celebration, right? That they get to take it off of them, something being wrong about where they are in the process of their grieving, and honor that and help them continue to process. This is a huge topic for me, and I feel like we could have an entire discussion on this. It's actually one of the things that changed my life. So in the coaching program that I've gone through, we call the woman who has created the whole program sort of calls it logistics. A person that's doing logistics and or in the back of the room or in the room at any place that's holding space for us when we create workshops or we put things on. Yes, they'll do something from time to time, potentially, but the main reason that they're there is to set the intention or hold the space or continue to keep a thought process going or energy flowing, that kind of thing. And my heart and journey is so grateful for the gift of getting to have this conversation with you this morning, because it really truly is something that I've naturally done since I was little. Listening to people is something I've naturally done since I was little. And I was always trying to solve whatever their problem was or come up with something for them. So I created a pattern around that, maybe the discomfort of the quiet and or the discomfort of just being. Wanted to become a physical therapist on my journey to help support people in their realm. Ended up found myself in ambulance as well, which I find very fascinating. And even this morning, listening to this gentleman share about his heart and his lungs, I immediately had a visceral reaction in my body. And as an empath is the only thing that I know to call it and or name it right now at this chapter in my life. It's so incredible how many people maybe don't feel that and or don't have a visceral reaction when someone shares something or have the same heightened senses that I'm also very curious about in my own journey. So anyway, I share those things to say one of the things that I've learned along the way through coaching, thank goodness, is to truly listen and to just be. What do you recommend for people to do while they're learning how to do that or attempting to practice those things for their own personal redirect and or to sit in that discomfort and be that?
Yeah, it is so hard. That tendency to fix, I think it's in all of us. And I wrote an article around this that folks can read if it's helpful, called Thou Shalt Not Fix. And it explores a little bit of our reasons why we go there. And I think women especially, we're societally trained to fix things in a lot of ways. And then what to do when we can't fix it, because we talked about there's some things that you simply cannot fix. One simple trick that I recommend for individuals to try out is asking people, you know, are you wanting to vent or do you want a solution? Right. So I have so many friends that will be talking about something and I could come up with a solution for them, but they may just want to vent. And my husband had to learn this as well. He had to ask me that because he wanted to fix my problems. I said, no, I just want to complain. And so really making it clear, you know, what is the other person needing in that moment? And the difficulty is, you know, think about yourself. We don't always know what we need when we are seeking that care and comfort for others. So the first step can sometimes be figuring out what we need when we're going through something really intense, or even not intense, even just had you had a rough day. You know, what do you need at the end of the day from someone else? What is it that they could give you? And then being explicit, you know, when you're with other people, offering that or offering something else. I think that's one way that we can start thinking about how to fix. The other concept that I sometimes talk about is there's a difference between being and doing. And it sounds like that's some of what was coming up for you, like the holding the space, right, is the being. That's being with someone, being present. The doing is more of the fixing, right? It's okay, let me help you with this. Let me, you know, and we need a balance of those, right? So there are times where we're going to need the doing and we're going to need some fixing. And it's really about discerning, okay, which do you do when? And oftentimes we will go to the fixing because we're uncomfortable with either the silence, as you talked about, or with the pain that's being expressed when we don't know what else to do. That's when we go to those fix-it modes, when we would do better to be present to ourselves, to the person that's going through something unimaginable.
Oh my goodness. I really hope that we all can learn how to not fix when not needed, and that we can trust that God doesn't need another angel, and that we can all go over and read your writings for that. If you're called to work with Christine, please, please, please reach out to her. Oh my gosh, there's so much magic that can come from the work that you're doing in the world, and that we can all start, begin, continue, and turn the volume up on showing up and shutting up. I think that that is huge. And then asking ourselves and asking friends, or maybe even being super transparent when we call someone and ask for permission if we might be able to vent and or if they have a solution for us. I think that those could really be game changers in how we can have more compassion for one another in this world and more connection too. Thank you so, so much. Where can people find you? How can they connect with you?
So the best place is probably my website, which I imagine you'll put in the show notes. So it's ChristineVDavies.com. On there, there's a link to my Substack newsletter where people can sign up. It's free to get emailed some of these tips or go and read some of the previous articles. And then if individuals are interested in doing one-on-one spiritual direction with me, either in person in New Jersey, or I do it virtually as well, all that information is also on my website.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Have a phenomenal week, everyone. We are cheering for you. We're rooting for you, and we love you. Thank you so much for being on this journey with me. One of the most generous things you could do at this moment is head over to Apple Podcasts or Spotify and rate and review this podcast if it touched your heart or helped you in some way. All of us here are wishing you a phenomenal day filled with love, abundance, and infinite possibilities. Until next time.